All right, so you're here with us on the deep dive because you're the kind of person who wants to, you know, get to the bottom of things.
Yeah.
But you don't have, you know, endless hours to wade through, you know, all the details.
Right.
We want to give you the big picture. And today we're going to be tackling a really transformative period of history, the Enlightenment.
And for this deep dive, you've given me a really great resource to work with, a lecture by Dr. Roger Green.
Yeah.
And it gives us, I think, a great lens to look at the Enlightenment, particularly as it impacted the church and Christian thought.
Absolutely. And so our goal today is really for you, the listener, to understand how the Enlightenment, you know, really ended up sort of sidelining Christianity and the church.
Okay.
And we're going to be looking at some of the core criticisms and changes in thinking that happened during that time. And so we're going to be focusing mostly on Western Europe and America, and really looking at, you know, what Dr. Green kind of, you know, has sort of pulled out as the most salient points about this period.
So to really get into that shift in thinking, Dr. Green first kind of lays out what exactly the Enlightenment was.
Right. So let's just dive right in.
Yeah.
So he says the Enlightenment was a period that really took hold in the 17th century. And he says that the key characteristic of the Enlightenment was, you know, it was a very deliberate attempt to apply reason and rational thought to every aspect of life. In fact, the 17th century was known as the Age of Reason.
Okay.
But then he goes on to say, as the 18th century kind of dawn, thinkers started to question whether reason alone was sufficient, especially when it came to matters of faith and religious life.
Right. So it's not just about reason. It's about, is reason enough?
Is reason enough? Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in the spiritual realm.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that brings us to sort of the philosophical underpinnings of this whole, you know, intellectual sea change. And he points to two figures that were really pivotal in this new way of thinking.
Okay.
John Locke and Immanuel Kant.
All right. Well, let's start with John Locke. So John Locke, late 17th, early 18th century, is very important for this concept of empiricism.
Okay.
So empiricism, he argued that all knowledge is based on experience.
Okay.
And it's based on the idea that when a human being is born, their mind is like a blank slate.
Right. Tabula rasa.
Yes. And everything that person comes to know is built upon experience.
Okay.
And that's really important, I think, for how the Enlightenment then begins to look at faith.
Right.
Because it says, you know, we don't necessarily start with God.
Yeah.
We start with our own experience.
And this is where it gets really interesting for you, the listener, because Dr. Green really emphasizes that for Locke, the starting point for understanding God was natural theology.
Right.
So instead of relying solely on, you know, sacred texts or church teachings, people began to look to the world around them,
right,
to nature, to the cosmos as a primary way to understand God. And that's what's meant by natural theology.
Okay.
So this was really different from revealed theology, which focuses on God's direct communication, you know, through Jesus and through scripture. And so it really, you know, puts the individual's observations and reasoning at the forefront, rather than the established doctrines of the church.
So that's a pretty fundamental power shift.
Right.
In terms of how people are approaching belief.
Huge power shift, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we have Immanuel Kant.
Yes.
And he comes a little bit later in the 18th century.
It's 18th century.
And Dr. Green kind of portrays him as representing humanity, coming of age, and reaching a point where reason becomes like the norm, the standard for how we engage with the world.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Kant was interesting because he recognized that reason had its limits.
Okay.
So when it came to knowing God, for example, that wasn't something you could just, you know, figure out through logic alone.
Right.
It involved faith as well.
Okay. So you can't reason your way into knowing God.
Exactly. But Kant was also really important for bringing ethics and morality.
Yeah.
You know, into focus.
Okay.
And he had this idea of the categorical imperative.
I've heard of that.
Have you?
I have.
Okay, so, like, for instance, if everybody decided it was okay to break promises.
Oh, yeah.
If that became, like, a universal rule.
Yeah.
Trust would completely break down.
Yeah, society would fall apart.
Exactly. So that's the kind of thought experiment that Kant proposed as a basis for ethical behavior.
Interesting. So is he saying, like, before you do something, you have to think, what if everybody did this?
Exactly.
And if it would be chaos, then don't do it.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Interesting.
And so what Dr. Green points out is that, you know, this focus on ethics might have inadvertently led some to see religion as primarily about being moral.
Okay. So, yeah. Like, that's the main thing about religion is just be a good person.
Right. And, of course, living ethically is, you know, important in most religions.
Of course, yeah.
But he suggests that this might have caused some to lose sight of other, you know, central aspects of religious belief.
Okay. So, like, what would those be?
Like, the nature of God.
Okay.
The significance of Jesus. The role of the church community.
Yeah.
So, it became more about individual moral conduct. And maybe less about, you know, deeper theological understanding.
Okay. So we see that there's this philosophical shift towards reason, towards individual experience.
Right.
How do these ideas begin to play out in different places?
Right. Well, the first place Dr. Green takes us to is England and the emergence of deism.
Deism.
Yeah. So deism wasn't actually like a specific religious group or denomination,
right,
but rather a philosophical and religious perspective that became very popular in England during the Enlightenment.
Okay.
And it did later influence thought in America.
Got it.
And they had a very specific idea of God.
What was that?
Dr. Green talks about the analogy of the watchmaker God.
Okay. The watchmaker God. I've heard that one.
Yeah. So, you know, God designs and sets the world in motion.
Okay.
But then doesn't actively interfere.
Right. So, like, yeah. God makes the watch, winds it up, and then lets it run.
Exactly. Yeah. And, yep. And he actually outlines six key characteristics of deism.
Okay. Let's hear them.
So, first, they believed in one creator, God.
Okay. Monotheistic.
Monotheistic. Exactly.
Okay.
Secondly, they strongly emphasized human free will, which was a departure from the Calvinist idea of predestination.
Oh, right. Okay. So, that was a big debate at the time.
Yeah. Huge debate.
Huge debate.
Third, they believed in living a virtuous and ethical life.
Okay.
And that reason was the way to determine what was virtuous.
Right. So reason is at the center of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Fourth, they believed in an afterlife where people would be rewarded or punished.
Okay.
Although their ideas about this were often pretty vague.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then fifth, they placed a high value on reason in all areas of life.
Okay.
Including religion and politics.
So not just like science. Not just figuring out how the world works.
Right. All areas of life.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And then the sixth one kind of goes back to what we were talking about with Locke.
Okay.
They emphasize natural theology, understanding God through the natural world.
Got it.
Okay.
All right. So those are the 6 points.
Yeah. But Dr. Green points out there was a big challenge for deism.
Oh, what's that?
How do you explain the existence of evil and suffering?
Oh, yeah, that's a tough one.
In the natural world, right?
Yeah.
So if God is this perfect watchmaker, why are there natural disasters and diseases?
Yeah, why do bad things happen to good people?
Right, exactly. It doesn't quite fit the image of, you know, this perfect order and design.
So that's kind of a tension within natural theology, I guess.
Huge tension.
If you're just relying on the natural world to understand God.
Right.
How do you fit in all of the stuff that seems to contradict that?
Exactly.
Okay.
And he also notes that deism eventually contributed to the development of Unitarianism.
Unitarianism?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Unitarianism?
I have.
Okay. So do you want to just give us like a really brief definition of what?
Sure. So Unitarianism is it's a branch of Christianity that that really emphasizes the oneness of God as opposed to the Trinity.
Right.
And they often reject the divinity of Christ.
Right.
And really focus on the inherent worth and dignity of every person.
Got it.
And they emphasize reason and rationality and really, like the ethical teachings of Jesus over, you know, supernatural claims.
Okay.
So I guess you can see how deism kind of feeds into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And to really understand deism in practice, he introduces us to two important English deist writers.
Oh, okay. Who are they?
John Tolan and Matthew Tyndall.
John Tolan, Matthew Tyndall. Right.
Yeah. So John Tolan wrote a book called Christianity Not Mysterious.
Not Mysterious.
Not Mysterious. And it was really kind of a foundational text for deism.
Okay.
And he basically argued that there's nothing within Christianity that can't be understood through human reason.
Wow. Okay, so like no miracles.
No miracles.
No, you know, divine mysteries.
No divine mysteries.
Yeah.
Nothing beyond our, you know, rational grasp.
That's a pretty revolutionary idea at the time.
Very revolutionary.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Matthew Tyndall, he wrote a book called Christianity as Old as Creation.
Christianity as Old as Creation.
Which really put reason at the center of religious understanding.
Okay.
And he actually rejected biblical miracles.
Okay.
And any form of divine revelation that went beyond what we could observe in the natural world.
Mm.
So for him, if it couldn't be reasoned out, it couldn't be considered true.
Right.
And Dr. Green points out that this led deists to interpret scripture very selectively.
Okay.
So accepting what aligned with their rational understanding
right.
and kind of discarding anything that seemed irrational or miraculous.
Okay, interesting. So they're picking and choosing
right.
what they like.
Exactly. And they had a very specific perspective on Jesus.
Okay, what was that?
They viewed him primarily as a good moral and ethical teacher, someone to admire and emulate,
okay,
but not necessarily divine.
Right.
Which Dr. Green then connects to C.S. Lewis's, you know, well-known liar lunatic or Lord argument
yeah.
from Mere Christianity.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
I do, yeah. So basically he's saying that if Jesus claimed to be God,
right,
then you can't just say, oh, he was a good teacher.
Right.
He was either telling the truth or he was a liar or he was crazy.
Right.
But you can't just dismiss it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it kind of highlights the challenges in the deist view of Jesus.
Right.
If you take his own claims seriously.
Got it.
So that's England with deism.
Okay.
Now, Dr. Green shifts our attention to France.
Ooh, France. Okay.
And what he calls naturalism.
Naturalism.
Yeah, this sounds like a much more confrontational situation.
Yeah, it does.
Than in England.
Okay.
Yeah. So he really emphasizes that the Enlightenment in France was considerably more radical.
Okay.
And less restrained than in England.
Mm.
There was a much more direct and open conflict with the established church.
All right, so they're not pulling any punches.
No punches pulled. And the sheer power and wealth of the church in France at the time likely contributed to this.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He mentions that the church owned a quarter of the land by 1789.
Wow, a quarter of the land?
Just before the French Revolution.
Oh, yeah, so that's a lot of power.
Huge amount of influence.
Yeah.
And so that kind of significant power and land ownership, you know, really bred resentment.
Right.
And fuel the anti-establishment sentiment that was brewing.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And so he introduces Benedict Spinoza.
Benedict Spinoza.
Yeah, and Spinoza's views on religion and the Bible were even more critical than those of the English deists.
Wow, even more critical.
Even more critical.
Okay.
He talks about Spinoza's development of a form of religious pantheism.
Pantheism. So
pantheism is the idea that God isn't a separate creator being.
Okay.
But is actually identical with the universe itself.
So God is in everything.
God is in everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then we have Voltaire. Yeah. And Voltaire took an even stronger and more aggressive stance against Christianity and the church.
Oh, really?
Even more so than Spinoza.
Wow.
He had this famous cry to crush the infamy.
The infamy.
Which really illustrates the depth of his hostility.
Yeah.
And he essentially believed that morality and ethics were the core of religion.
Okay.
And he wanted to strip away, you know, all the theological doctrines and the institutional church structure.
Got it.
Yeah. And what's important to understand is that his critique was very sharp and targeted.
Right. He's not meant to the words.
No, not at all. And then still in France, we have Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
Rousseau.
And Rousseau actually was born in Switzerland.
Okay.
But had a major influence in France.
Okay.
And later in America.
Got it.
And he offered a slightly different perspective.
Okay. So.
Dr. Green highlights two key aspects of his thought that had a significant impact.
Okay.
So firstly, Rousseau emphasized feeling and inner experience as the true essence of religion. So this marked a move away from the purely rational focus of earlier Enlightenment thinkers.
So like back to the is reason enough question.
Yeah, is reason enough? And he was kind of pushing back against that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And his emphasis on emotion and intuition foreshadowed the rise of the Romantic movement.
Okay.
And then secondly, Rousseau advocated for a return to the natural world.
Okay.
And the idea of the noble savage.
I've heard that one.
Yeah. And he criticized the artificiality and corruption he saw in, you know, increasingly industrialized societies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as we look back at the criticisms that were directed at the church and Christianity during the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
You know, as presented in Dr. Green's lecture,
yeah,
several key themes emerge.
Okay, what are they?
So, you know, the emphasis on reason taking precedence over revelation and faith,
yeah,
is a central thread, along with the questioning of miracles,
okay,
and traditional religious teachings,
right.
We also see a notable shift towards natural theology,
right,
and a growing emphasis on human autonomy and individual experience as the basis for understanding the divine.
Hmm. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Because, I mean, we still struggle with these questions today, right?
Absolutely.
Like, how do we balance reason and faith?
Right.
What do we do with these stories of miracles?
Right.
How
much authority do we give to religious institutions?
Yeah, and where does individual experience fit in?
Right.
That's so relevant
So relevant.
to,
Well,
discussions happening today.
yeah. And so, I think the big question for you, the listener, to think about is how does understanding the Enlightenment's critique of the church influence how we view the relationship between personal belief, organized religion, and the pursuit of knowledge in our own time?
Right. How much do those things go together? How much are they in tension?
Right.
How do we make sense of that?
Exactly. And maybe, if you're really interested in this topic, delving deeper into the original writings of figures like Locke and Kant and, the key thinkers of the French Enlightenment could offer even more profound insights for you.
Sounds like a good place to leave it.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think so too. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, this is a good one.
This is great. All right, we'll see you next time on the Deep Dive.
Bye-bye.